The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 19, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning. Morning.
Good to see you on this cold, cold morning. Right now it's 9 degrees below zero, negative 9. That's Fahrenheit. For those who are outside the U.S., Celsius, that's about minus or negative 23 degrees Celsius. So what we call zero, we're going to warm up to about minus one today, negative one and Fahrenheit, but that was still about 17 or 18 degrees negative Celsius. Anyway, it's cold. So I want people outside the U.S. to understand how cold it is. Actually, this isn't as cold as it used to get, though. We would get, there's just 9 below right now. I lived in northern Minnesota. I grew up there, and we'd get 40 below, you know. But down here, 30 below, I'm sure we used to get in the cities. But anyway, well, we don't get those kind of temperatures anymore. So this is sort of balmy for us native Minnesotans here, anyway. Well, I also understand there's a few folks visiting from Green Bay this morning, so wherever you are, yeah, I thought it might be you three, yes. So good to see you, good to have you here. You're used to cold weather there too, so this can't be too bad for you. So, well, this morning I thought I would talk about at ease in the world. That probably sounds a little awkward, a little strange. So if I were to just say being at ease in the world, that might make it a little bit more comfortable. But that also puts some distance between what it is I'm going to try to point out to you and where we are, if we grasp that word, being. But it makes it easier for us to understand. At least we feel like it makes it, because we, now it seems like, oh yeah, I can get hold of something. But to the awakened, this isn't really an indication of true understanding. If you get hold of something like that, it actually kind of obscures what the actual experience is of this moment. And that's what I want to talk about today. What kind of triggered this for me was that I just received this last week an email from someone who, well, in my book, not in my, well, in my book, you can find whatever it is you key in to find a website. I don't know this kind of, I don't know the language. I'm looking at Jose like maybe he can help me here. But I don't know the language, so I can't talk intelligently about online stuff and that sort of thing. But there is a website that was created for my last book. And in it, then I have a section in there. Well, Jose set it up for me, but I think it's called Ask Steve or something like that, where people can give me questions, you know. The idea was, I think, about what I was saying in that book. And I was, at first, getting questions like that. But then more and more questions were just getting to be more general, or oftentimes they weren't even questions. So I kind of just let that drop in case any of you ever go there. You'll notice I haven't really responded to anything in the last couple of years, so because I really don't get questions so much anymore, but or that are actual questions. But I did get one this past week, I think it was, who seemed a bit irritated by a question that I had answered some years ago, well, a couple of years ago. So I wanted to say, though I think the person did show some appreciation for for my work and that sort of thing, but I want to say a little bit about this. I've already kind of alluded to it by talking about what I was going to title this talk, but removing that word being. Because the question that was put to me originally, the original question that does appear on the website there, a person was asking me, I guess. How has the realization of ultimate reality altered or changed or influenced, whatever, my understanding and my behavior? Well, already, you see, there's a problem there. When he used the term your, and I saw it in my response, I said that using the word your, that makes it a little unclear, but maybe not, maybe totally obscures. What are we talking about here? When they were speaking of me, your, so my understanding, or my, it wasn't understanding, I don't think, but my behavior was, I think, an understanding. How it's changed my life. Well, you see, there's an assumption there. So I said, when using the word your, like speaking of me, so you want me to say how I have changed or how this is altered or my understanding of the world? That all seems to be very clear using the word your, which is what the writer was speaking of me. So I just indicated, just said that that's not really clear what is meant by your. But then I went on and responded that basically it is, well, it's put me at ease in the world. But that's not it either, you see, me. It's just at easiness, this change in the understanding or realization of what's ultimately going on here. This is at easeness in the world. And I thought this might be appropriate too for the situation that we're in now, the current situation here in the U.S., where it looks like we're going to be undergoing some major changes, perhaps, in the way our government is run and all of this. And of course, that can put us all very ill at ease. Some may be excited, others may be kind of depressed about the world and what's taking place. But this has everything to do with this matter of I or me in the picture. And again, what I was just alluding to in my original response, and I said more about it in the next paragraph, my answer on the website. But that initial thing by putting, you know, the object there, or in my case now it would be the subject, into the picture, this brings in all the pain and suffering and anxiety and confusion and the longing and loathing, you know, running from or chasing after all of that we experience in the world. This is a great source of pain and anxiety for us. So I think it's probably worth taking another look at this. But this was also the person who wrote to me this week expressed some real irritation that, you know, for me it's unclear to say your, if I'm so confused about that word your and I don't understand your. Well, how can I understand what anybody is asking me, or how to respond to anything? If they have to put the word your and every a lot of other words into quotes, you know. Well, I remember this reminded me too of times. Some people have actually said this to me directly, but also emails or whatever letters I get sometimes. They'll say, because it's been noted elsewhere, well, if you don't understand what I was referring to, but just go look in a mirror. As if I've never looked in a mirror, you know. And even as a child, long ago, you know, before I had any philosophical thoughts about that reflection, I understood, yeah, okay, so that's me in the mirror. I understand that. So I would hope that if somebody hears me talking like this, questioning this matter of me or I, and what are we referring to here, that you would maybe, I don't say give me the benefit of the doubt here, but that there might be something very subtle that is being pointed out here, not easily grasped. And in fact, I will tell you, it is impossible to grasp. But we can see what's actually taking place here. And this is actually also what we know. And we all have this knowledge, this realization of ultimate reality, ultimate truth. I've pointed this out many times. It is not something, this kind of knowledge and understanding is not something you need to chase after. It is not something you have to figure out. Anything you figure out will be expressed in concepts and words, and be thought of in these ways. And then we can manipulate these various concepts and ideas and whatever to maybe engender some more ideas and thoughts and feelings and understanding, and some of which would be very, very helpful, very useful for us in our intellectual life, our conceptual life, the conceptual world that we kind of create for ourselves, yeah, or so it might seem. You know, so this is very important, and I'm not dismissing any of this. But what we tend to not see is the drawing in of all kinds of terror and difficult feelings and hurts and worries and pains and sorrows, as well as, you know, maybe overly exuberant joy and something like this, which the Buddha points out, yeah, well, this kind of sets us up now for profound disappointment a little later on. And this situation that we find, this is dukkha. The Buddha pointed out as dukkha. And we're so easily caught up in that. But it is there. As soon as we have this sense of I, well, when I first understood this aspect of the teaching that I've been alluding to here now. I was 32 years old when I suddenly realized what this is actually pointing out for us and understood it. I say I. There was understanding there of this. And then shortly after that, I found out I had cancer. I was only 32 years old. I had a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I had a tumor here in the middle of my chest about the size of a grapefruit. I had lumps in my neck like ping pong balls were stuck under, you know, my neck here. One of my kidneys was pushed over from a tumor growing alongside of it or something like that. And above and below the diaphragm. And stage 4. This was 1978. Years later, a cardiologist I had to attend to because I needed some, I had some stents put in my heart. And he said, you had a stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in 1978? I said, yeah. He said, people didn't survive that. And I said, yeah, I know very few have, but here I am. Now that's 47 years ago or so, and still here. But at the time, I didn't know that. A close friend of mine who was a physician, I just wanted to level with me, what's my situation here when I had the tumor and the lumps and all that. And she said 2, maybe 3 months, meaning that's how much longer I can expect to live, you know. Now, as I said, it was sometime before, just a few months before that, when I suddenly realized this practice I had been doing and what I was studying with my teacher, Gadagiri Roshi, and others, I finally realized this. You know, so the man who wrote that question to me some time ago, how did this change my understanding with your realization of ultimate reality, ultimate truths, whatever? Well, see, all of this is this is the wrong way to understand this, because it isn't my understanding. The understanding that is here right now doesn't belong to me. It isn't mine to the extent that I would make it mine. And I have this understanding. I was interested in enlightenment when I first heard about Buddhism, started studying. That's right. There was this thing called enlightenment. The Buddha was enlightened. Wow, that sounds like be a pretty good place to get to in your mind. We'd be at peace, and nothing's baffling. Yeah, but you see, I was, like all of us probably, I was looking for that for myself. I wanted to get there. I wanted to have that. And this drive me on forward. And I remember too, getting into my later 20s, I was beginning to really despair at the world. And all the Vietnam stuff was raging and all of that at the time. And Martin Luther King, and he was assassinated. It was late 60s. This was a kind of a difficult time. And in my personal life, it was pretty difficult. I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. I'd been studying many things and changed my major in college, I don't know how many times. Trying to get to the bottom of things, wanting to find this peace and understanding, and beginning to really despair. But then I'd already been looking at Nagarjuna, for some time, and that's another story how I stumbled on him so early on. But working on these things for a long time, looking these things over, practicing the meditation, which I had taken up on my own many years earlier, actually, but not knowing what I was doing at first, but then getting some instruction in that. Anyway, so this is going on for a bit. Got into Zen then, after Nagarjuna, but it's flourishing in development in China and all of that. And so looking at all of these things. And maybe still somewhat despairing. And then I finally met Katagiri. I'd gone and visited various teachers in different places to practice. I was always kind of dissatisfied with whatever I came up, joined in with a little bit or whatever, and moved on. I was back in Minnesota here for a while, and I got a job at the university here. And I was thinking, what I'm going to have to do is go to Japan, enter a monastery or something like that. So I was saving my money to do this, just that when I discovered there was a Zen master here in town. And it was Katagiri Roshi. I couldn't believe it. So I began practicing with him. And right away I noticed, I was very taken with Nagarjuna by that time in my own studies, personally. But here, first time I'd ever seen or heard anybody talking in such a way, it rang of Nagarjuna, an understanding of Nagarjuna in my ear. And I realized this is the teacher I want to study with. Well, it was during this time then and all the misery I was suffering from was still there, until I suddenly understood what this teaching was, and here where I wanted to find some ease from the pain, the suffering that I had, the sorrow that I've been experiencing. I wanted to find something genuine and real and true in the world. And it seemed like, I don't know if there's any hope for this, but there's still something in Nagarjuna, and things that Katagiri would point out in this practice itself that kept me going. I almost quit a few times. But when that understanding came, it was Well, as I already mentioned, it wasn't my understanding. It wasn't something I figured out. There was no answer. I thought up until then that an answer was required. Isn't that what I'm looking for? No, actually not. Because an answer would be some particular thing. And what I could see now was, it was this, in this particularness, this thing that, and we attach words to this, your or mine, my understanding, whatever, what would be the I, the me, the you, the your. To the extent that we are still holding to something like that, there's that pain in that miserable time in my late 20s and early 30s there, where I was so miserable. And this is when I, perhaps through my own just inner turmoil and my psychological states, whatever, maybe this is where I developed that cancer. I don't know. I don't pretend to know. But it was an awful time. But here I was now, and I didn't know at the time, at the time when I finally understood this, that I had this pretty terrific cancer that was barreling along now. But a few months later, I found out. But there was this other understanding. And it wasn't like, I have to become enlightened. I want to get that. I want to find this piece. All of a sudden, you have what appears to be a very quick, life-threatening condition here. It's not going to last long. It's going to take you pretty soon. But with this understanding, I mean, that would have really thrown me for a loop. I'm sure it would have. Probably drove me crazy. I don't know. Whatever. But as I told Katagiri Roshi at the time, when I told him the situation I was in, and I said, I realize now it's just a matter of just put one foot in front of the other, just keep walking, just live my life. With deep appreciation for this way of which I now understood in this practice, and just carrying it on. And with a deep desire to help others. And this, suddenly there was the whole course of my life. And I started writing and that sort of thing. Once in a while, Katagiri would ask me to give a talk, when I quickly realized that through both trying to express things in writing and also in talking, you can't even talk about this. Because, see, it isn't some particular thing that I now understood. And also this whole thing about I, that was always there too. It's like, I doesn't mean anything. It's not referring to anything. There's just this immediate understanding, which at one time not so long ago was very confused. But there was me in there grasping and trying to figure it out and make it work and apply it to my life so I don't have to suffer so much. But that itself is, there's the suffering and the confusion and the fear. Yeah, and all the trouble. And in the things that go on in the world, we had the Vietnam War before most of you, I'm sure don't remember that, but not as it's raging in the world, but there's plenty of other things. And now it looks like we might be facing some troubled times ahead again. But to the extent that we're trying to work with all of that, and what, you're going to try to control any of that in some way? You're going to lose. You'll never be able to control all that. You won't even be able to control this thing that you sense is maybe me, yourself, you know, I. But that is not what we need to do. We need to see how it is in grasping at that and reaching for this and that. And there's something here that'll make me feel better or protect me in some way. whatever, make us feel better in some way. And I brought in that thing about that I had cancer. I would have been fighting with that, struggling with that. But at some point I realized that isn't it at all. That's not what needs to be done. What I had learned then, it isn't that I had it and I had learned it. And so I knew now how to be at peace in the world, at ease in the world. It isn't that at all. It's just, there's an at-easeness right here. It's with us all the time right now. We keep blocking ourselves from that because we keep fighting, struggling, trying to win this, or we're afraid of that situation that might be coming now, and it's just endless with us. Or I gotta have that, I gotta have that job or that car or whatever, that career, whatever it might be. And we don't realize how not only is this living a painful life, a confused life, sometimes we think, well, there's a lot of joy in it. You know, we take pleasure at other people's pain sometimes. Some people fall into this kind of thinking, that kind of understanding. But none of these things truly bring you the kind of joy that you might feel, what, is your due or is possible for you? Or do we despair because I'll never have that? It is just a matter of finally seeing what we're doing there with this. And so that's why I asked that person who originally wrote and wanted to know how realization, my realization of ultimate reality, there's a presumption here that I realized this. I don't realize anything in terms of having an object here or a truth that I could hand you and tell you what it is. There is understanding, but it is wordless, objectless. There's no concept involved with it. It's not an imagery in my mind. You know, our meditation is not such that where we sit there and try to conjure up a nice, peaceful setting for ourselves and that sort of thing. Just sit down. It's one of our teachers from way back in our lineage that Norm and I inherited, and Steve, you know, has inherited, go back, I don't know how many generations now, but the Yakusan, sitting, and his teacher, Sekito, asking him, what are you doing? And he says, I'm not doing anything. And he says, so you're sitting idly, the teacher said. If I were sitting idly, I'd be doing something. What is it you're not doing? And he said, even Buddhas don't know. Even the enlightened don't know. They don't know in the sense that they've got an idea here, a concept. They're gripping something there. They're holding something. They've figured something out and they... No. No, it's because they don't. We can all see. We can see the pain in the world and the, you know, our reflection in the water and in the mirror. All of this. But we don't need to make anything of it, but just be present with it. The last time I was speaking here, I talked about presence, which isn't a big factor in our teaching, in our practice, because there's nothing but presence. But it's a matter of being attentive to just this. And in doing that, the quietness will come with when you realize that very quickly you're spinning off into thoughts about this or that, and very often I, the thinker here, I'm woven into some of these things. Not all of them. I seem to be looking at some of these things very objectively. You know, but there's other things where I'm involved. And of course there's a lot of this going on where we're not even aware of to the degree that we may or may not be in there and creating it. The backdrop is pain, is confusion, the lack of ease at being here in the world. And then when something like cancer comes along, I've had three other major cancers. I'm dealing with one right now, as a matter of fact, though it seems I'm on a very good track with this one. But it is possible to experience things like that. And losing loved ones, my brother, some of you know, just recently passed away. The main thing was he had prostate cancer and died. I had prostate cancer 10, 12 years ago now. That seems to be in remission. I've had lung cancer. I don't smoke, but I had lung cancer. That seems to be in remission. Now I'm dealing with another form of cancer. And that's looking pretty good. So, but it could go badly as well. Sooner or later, it's going to catch up for each of us. It'll catch up with us, you know. We seem to be mortal. We seem to be. Can't really say that we are, though. If you look carefully, if you wake up to what this is, can't really say you're, can't say you're immortal either. And see, that looks like, well, it's got to be one or the other. No, it can't be one or the other. But we can, you can see that. I say you. It isn't you, though. That if this is seen, there isn't an object here that's seen, or a subject here, me, that's seeing this. But this is truly, truly seeing. And this is being at ease in the world, no matter what it might cough up for you. Suddenly or slowly approaching, we can be at ease in the world. And then with this, if you're still thinking of me, I want to be realize that where this confusion is suffering, the thing you might want to get away from, step away from, the confusion, the pain, the not knowing, is from this occupation with me. If you realize, that sense of me, it comes on to me. I still kind of remember what that, I mean, I feel that, it just shows up sometimes. And then, but I know now, to see if I could just let that go. Just let it go now. It doesn't help with anything. This embroils me, the sense of me coming back here now, in a lot of difficulty of all kinds. And it's not necessary. It's not necessary to chase it away, that sense of me or I. You don't need to chase it away. You could ask yourself, though, what's a fellow who wrote me now who seemed so irritated that I was trying to point some of it up very briefly, that I was trying to say, I want to just talk about your or my or you or something like this in an ordinary way. Yeah, I can do that. I know how English works. And but when I slow down and really look at that, and I would ask him or you or anyone, take a look at a word like that, your or me or I. If you can find out what you think you're referring to, we have a strong sense, yeah, me, I have a very strong sense of me, we could say, yeah. But beyond just that kind of a feeling, what is it? There's no enduring thing there about it that you could name or pick out. If you find something like that, please bring it to me. I'd like to know what you found. And this is what our practice is just to sit down like Yaku-san, not doing anything. Not thinking, not sitting, you got a reason, well, this will calm me down, or this will help me get enlightened, or that is just raging delusion. If you really settle down and you finally see that. Yeah, don't pick up anything. That's what this practice is, and it's so easy for us and in various schools of Zen and different places. You're pretty soon caught with this manner and that manner. This is what really needs to be done here, is something utterly simple. I better stop because I realize I've gone over the line here. So, but do you have any questions? We can still talk, I guess, but if you have questions or concerns or arguments. Anybody out there in Zoom land? Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.